The Financial Survival Network, helping you to survive and thrive in the new economy. Get our complimentary newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. This is the Financial Survival Network.
1490 WGCH, this is Carrie Lutz. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. And I've got Mickey Fulp on the line with me now. He's fresh from rounding up the cattle. He had a major roundup today. They broke loose and they charged the barn and we're eating next year's supplies. But speaking of next year, until you figure out exactly where you were the last year, it's hard to know where you're going to be this year. That's why Mickey and I are doing the annual review, our first annual review of the major markets. Mickey, how are you?
I'm well, Carrie. Cal's back in the corral, so all's good.
Hey, man, I mean, that's a totally different lifestyle than I'm accustomed to. The closest I get to the cows is when I go to the butcher shop and they give me a pound of steak, you know?
Yeah, well, we kind of do it on our own here.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I only wish that I had been taught those skills earlier in life so that where I need to call upon them, I'd have them. But unfortunately, growing up in the Northeast, you're locked into interdependency and hoping that the system keeps working and everything works out okay, but we know that isn't always the case. But we made it through 2012. It's on to 2013, but the markets, they were a little bit stagnant and lackluster last year, weren't they, for the most part?
Well, the major markets actually did quite well, you know, with the exception of the Dow, which was only up 7% of the year. Mm-hmm. And that probably has to do with the fact it's a bunch of legacy companies who, I mean, they're blue chip stocks, but they're basically pension and retirement funds and insurance companies now. But the other major markets, the S&P 500, NASDAQ, Russell 2000, were all up in the range of 13 to 15%. So that was quite a good performance by those. Toronto Index, 1% of the year. And that probably has to do with it's very commodity heavy, the companies represented. And commodities, although they were up over the year and prices remained high, there were no really great jumps in commodities. The emerging market index was a winner at plus 15% over the year. The BIX, driven by the BIX, the emerging market index, versus legacy, if you will, nations like the U.S. and Western Europe and the Japanese with debt and currency issues.
Yeah, so the more established markets, I guess, and the emerging did pretty well, but the venture, Toronto Venture, got slaughtered, huh?
Well, it did. It was down almost 18% over the year, following up on a very dismal performance in 2011 also. There's just no demand for the risk involved in the juniors right now, and I do not see the end in sight for most, as we discussed ad nauseum perhaps in the past. You know, certain juniors are likely to do well, but for the most part, this end of the sector is of the resource sector does not look positive to me.
Right, and that kind of leads us into the metals, which another kind of interesting year, I guess. Gold did fairly okay.
Yeah, emerging market countries certainly would rather have some gold and not have all their foreign reserves in U.S. dollars or euros, or God only hopes they're not in Japanese yen at this point. silver, although it was up almost, 9% over the year, silver's just a mess, you know, and I'm going to do a little editorializing here. I don't really understand people that play the silver market. You know, with the exception of its volatility, we had 7 months plus or minus rises or falls in the silver price of well over 6%. 3 months, you know, it was up 13% 1 month. It was down 11% 1 month. You know, it's the most speculative and the most manipulated market that I know of in the world. Probably the only thing that would be worse than trying to play timing in the silver market would be to own a bunch of paper silver. The ETFs certainly underperformed this year. The big ESLV was, compare this, a 1.9% increase over the year with compared to almost 9% in actual silver bullion price. And then there's a well-known entrepreneur or big investor in our business, and his silver fund was down a whopping, this is a physical silver fund, down a whopping 16% over the year. So, you know, that's a market I tend to stay away from.
Other than platinum, holding some physical, right?
No, it's certainly a good thing, I think, but trying to time the silver market is fraught with difficulty. The platinoids did quite well. Platinum was up over 10%. Palladium was up over 7% over the year. And there were probably three factors that affected the platinum and palladium price. There are better auto sales. The big automakers looked better throughout the course of the year. Then we had the strikes in South Africa, which took a lot of platinum supply off the market. And then the rumors are that Russia's running out of palladium stockpiles. Certainly, their sales into the market this year, which are not really transparent, but they're certainly down, and so that's been bullish for the price of palladium. Copper in supply-demand balance for the fifth consecutive year. We look at forecasts of people that follow this market on a daily basis. They are predicting very small surpluses this year. But basically, that market is in balance. It was up something on the order of 2.5% last year. And so we've talked about the range-bound nature of silver, and I don't foresee that changing in 2013.
You know, it's interesting to me, Mickey, like the whole demand base for platinum and palladium is catalytic converter auto demand. And, you know, I know that it was a big major thing 25, 30 years ago when they first came out with it. Maybe it was 35 years. But I can't believe that they can't do any better and they need to be gobbling up platinum and palladium in these, you know, in what are very small markets. I just can't believe there's nothing better than a catalytic converter for pulling pollution out of the air, you know, out of the tailpipe of the car.
Well, that's what these metals are good at doing, and they're unique metals. The platinoids are six metals, only two or three of which have any abundance on the earth where they can be mined and recovered and used. And, you know, not only are they used in catalytic converters, but they're used in cracking petroleum to make all the products we use, from gasoline to jet fuel to fuel oil or diesel. So they're essential to what we do, and they do it better. You know, I mean, there have been over the few years improvements made where they've transitioned, especially in gasoline engines, from platinum to palladium. There's some use for silver as a catalyst. There is some use for molybdenum as a catalyst. But all in all, the platinum and palladium are the ones that perform. And it looks to me like that's the foreseeable future for internal combustion engines.
Yeah, and now they have. It used to be in the developing world, they didn't have catalytic converters. They just skipped them. They didn't care about pollution. Now every car on the planet pretty much has got a catalytic converter.
Yeah, well, there was a period of time when you and I were kids where there wasn't a car in the world with a catalytic converter either. You know, and my heat my house with wood, in the South Valley down here. Even one of my wood stoves has a catalytic converter on it. So there you go.
Amazing. Amazing how things develop. I got to believe that probably the nanotechnology is going to come up with some means of supplanting them, but that's probably a ways off. So we're stuck with them for now, and that's to the benefit when you're in that market, especially with the rising auto demand and declining supply, which is what we're seeing.
Yes, that's true.
Yep. So then we go on to our energy sector, which was a fascinating study this year, I think, don't you?
Well, it certainly has been. North American oil and gas, oil was down 7% over the year, but still trading at a relatively high price to close the year, about $92. So that's a robust price. The gas industry suffered extremely over the year, although it ended up the year up 15%, but we're still saddled with a very low gas price, closed the year at $3.43, lots of shut-in gas wells. And this whole story has been about shale gas and shale oil, in fact. North Dakota is now the U.S.'s second largest oil producer, exceeded Alaska, only behind Texas. And the real problem here is we've got all this oil and gas, but we don't have infrastructure to get it to market. It's especially critical in the gas market, but increasingly becoming so in North Dakota. I mean, they're transporting crude oil by truck and rail. Yeah. Because of lack of pipeline infrastructure. And so, you know, we look at these two markets, which are depressed compared to world markets. World natural gas prices is at least $15 outside of North America, $15 a million BTU. Brent crude, we're looking at close the year at almost $111. Compare that with WTI at $92. So what we're seeing is North America has the ability to become energy independent, but we don't have the infrastructure to do that.
Yeah, well, I told you I've got a friend now who's been fracking for 25 years, and I call him Dr. Frackenstein. We're going to have him on with you. But what's happening in the Eagle Ford in Texas, it's going to outproduce North Dakota. I sent you that article, I think, a couple of days ago. It's slated the year after next, 2014. It will be producing more oil, and the production in the Bakken shale is projected to go up 20 or 30% during that time anyway. So the Eagle Shale, they've invested $27 billion in, because it's right by the pipelines. The infrastructure is right there. And you're going to see huge, huge production coming out of there. So it wouldn't surprise me to see these prices down. When we do this review the end of next year, God willing, I think we're going to see that West Texas lower than it is today. And because the infrastructure is by Texas, a good amount of that and the distillate will get exported. And then, you know, then you're going to see worldwide prices, at least in the oil sector, start to decline as well. But just my theory, I could be proven wrong.
And then the final energy input we always do is uranium. And that was the real negative story of the year, down almost 15% for the spot price. And there were a couple of reasons for that. The demand is off 10% with 48 of 50 reactors in Japan still shut in. Because of that and government dumping of DOE uranium inventories on the market, which we've talked about before, that really depressed the spot price, which led to discretionary buying by utilities. So we have no short-term utility needs. And what that has done is it's opened up more of a midterm market, which we've really never had in the uranium business before. So a mixed bag, but certainly we would expect uranium because of what, 60 reactors in construction worldwide right now. We expect uranium to do quite well in the mid to long term.
And China has the largest nuclear reactor in the world coming on stream. I think it's the end of 2013 or 2014. So, like you say, 60 of them on the board. There's no question in the long term. And, you know, Japan's going to have to do something about their energy situation. They can't just let it go on like that. You know, with those reactors, they're going to have to restart the ones that are presumed to be safe to be in operation. So it's just a question of when, not if, with them, I think. And then we get to the currencies, where we almost don't have to talk about them. The dollar did virtually nothing, and the euro did a little bit more than nothing, or a little bit less than nothing. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, they were essentially flat for most of the year. Dollar index plus or minus $80. End of the year at just a little bit under 80, started the year a little bit above 80. Euro started the year with relation to the dollar at $1.30, end of the year at $1.32. It's foreign exchange is pretty dull, not a lot of arbitrage going on there right now. And basically what's happened, it's a worldwide race to devalue, and the yen is taken in the shorts, but Japan's in a world of hurt. Not only are they in a 20-plus year stagnation phase or deflationary phase, their markets have gone nowhere. They have an aging population with very poor demographics. They've just announced a new government stimulus program, which is going to again devalue the yen. And then add that to the fact that they're paying $100 million more a day for energy costs because of all the natural gas they have to import to replace the nuclear reactors offline. So Japan's a mess. And
they're still rebuilding.
And we'll
rebuilding.
Let it go with that.
And they're still rebuilding from the quake that they had, too. So just a total cluster, you know what.
We don't even really, I think, in the Western Hemisphere understand the rebuilding that must be still going on. I mean, essentially, the northern third of the eastern coast of Japan was destroyed of the main island, and there was a lot of manufacturing capability there and oil refineries in addition to nuclear power plants. So, it's kind of gone off the radar screen, but certainly that economy is not doing well, and I don't think can it be expected to do well for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, sad, because they were going to be the world economic power. And, you know, one of the things they say is you look at a city and you see how many skyscrapers are being built and who's trying to build the biggest one in the world. And you can pretty much say that that economy will be the next to fail or fall. And it's been pretty right, that indicator. You go back to the U.S., you know, in the late 20s, they built the Empire State Building, depression. And then you go to, you know, the Middle East, you go to the Far East, and it seems to be a pattern, like somehow the Tower of Babel, we try to reach too high, too close, and we get our wings singed, you know? So
yes.
So that's it for 2012. You know, yeah, definitely the place to be was the stock markets, various stock markets, although not in the Toronto Venture, and the energy, you know, pretty much the mixed bag, and the metals up, but not really that much, not as much as in previous years, but the gold continued for the 12th year to go up. And, you know, then we look at the energy sector and, you know, the currencies, and really not a lot of excitement in either one. And now we're on to 2013, and I have a feeling, though, this picture is going to change around dramatically. I don't know why, but I just feel like there's events, forces, economic forces in play that are going to move the things in a different way this year. But hey, like I say, don't listen to me because I just lose money in the markets. I make money in metals. I lose money in the market. So if you listen to me, don't sue me because you were warned you're going to lose money. And on that note, Mickey.
Well, I'm gonna leave these markets behind and go watch what I hope is a great football game tonight. So
hey, let's hope so. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with the end of the month review. We'll try to get in one if I can get Dr. Frankenstein lined up. We'll do a little thing on fracking because I think you'll enjoy this person.
Okay, sounds good. All right, Jerry, take care.
Be well.